This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
When I read that the world is losing 2,000 hectares a day, almost 5,000 acres every day, of valuable farm soil to salt damage, I thought, aha, rising seas are impinging on the deltas. No, this is a completely different problem that I did not know about, brought on by human agriculture. Valuable cropland is disappearing, just as our increasing population needs it most. Here to explain is lead researcher Mansoor Kadir. He's the Assistant Director of Water and Human Development at the United Nations University's Institute for Water and Environment and Health. He's based in Canada. Dr. Kadir has taught in Germany and Pakistan as well. He was a senior scientist at ICARDA, the well-known Global Agricultural Research Center. Mansoor Kadir, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you.
I didn't know about this agricultural risk. Could you please take your time and explain the process where plant-killing salt can develop on farming land?
Yeah, it's very actually interesting, but very straightforward phenomenon. What happens is that all waters, they have salts in them. Even the fresh water, the good quality water that flows through rivers. So every water has salts. Just to give you an idea that if we irrigate a piece of land with a good quality water, say for instance to grow a crop like wheat or cotton, we basically add the amount of water that also adds salts to that land, which are between 1 to 2 tons per hectare. What I'm talking about, irrigation is needed in those areas where the rainfall is not sufficient to meet the crop water requirement. And this usually happens in dry areas, in arid and semi-arid areas, where the rainfall is less than the crop would normally need. So what happens that when we irrigate, part of the water is just evaporated from the soil. The other one goes into the soil from where the plants take up pure water with some nutrients, very minor amount of salts. The rest amount is left within the root zone. Same applies to evaporation process. When water evaporates from the soil surface, salts are left. So basically, if we irrigate in a dry area, we basically add about 1 to 2 tons per hectare with each crop of salt. So we need to manage these salts because these salts tend to accumulate in the soil surface and slowly they reach to that level which could become toxic or very high concentration where the plant growth may be affected. So if we continue accumulating salts in the root zone, the soils become salt affected. There are ways available to manage these salts, but this is how the salts accumulate in soil.
Well, first of all, I presume this wouldn't happen in nature without irrigated farming. Am I correct?
That's right. Yeah. The type of salinity that we are talking about is basically irrigation-induced. It's basically human-induced salinization, or we also call it as secondary salinization. There are soils available on this planet which have been developed from the parent material, which was salty itself. So those are different types of salt. We are talking about those soils which have been transformed into salt-affected lands because of the mismanagement of irrigation and salt.
Just so we can picture how serious this is, how big is the area lost to salt degradation since the early 1990s?
Actually, we are talking about the salt-affected lands in the irrigated agriculture only. Currently, there are about 310 million hectares irrigated land all over the world. And of that, about 20% is salt-affected. So meaning about 62 million hectares are affected by salts to a varying level. In 1990, this extent was about 45 million hectares. Just going through a simple calculation would lead us to a number which is equal to about 2,000 hectares are affected by salinity every day in irrigated areas.
And that's about the size of France, your press release said.
The size of the France is basically the overall salt-affected lands on this planet.
All right, now let's talk about a couple of places where we wouldn't expect this to happen. For example, it's hard to believe that salt degradation is happening in Australia's breadbasket, the Murray-Darling Basin. Is it related to the extended drought that they experienced in past years?
No, this is not the case. Actually, in the Murray-Darling Basin, what happened, that it's a long history. There was some of the area which was covered by forests, and there was a natural equilibrium of salts. So those were actually removed, and those lands were brought into cultivation. And by that, irrigation was also started. So with that actually irrigation and some other new area where there was no crop grown before, so those areas were brought under cultivation. And with the irrigation, with the gradual increase in the amount of salts added, as I already actually explained, so the salts tend to accumulate it in the Murray-Darling Basin. So then the Australian government undertook a very aggressive step, and they developed a salinity management strategy, which is called as Murray-Darling Salinity Management Strategy. And then they installed the drainage system and removed the salts which was accumulated in the root zone. So now they have brought back significant area into a highly productive state from salt-affected land.
The United States prides itself on modern farming and can afford infrastructure like drainage. How can salt degradation be happening in the San Joaquin Valley?
In the San Joaquin Valley, it had the same actually issue, because it also falls under aided and semi-aided area. And there, they wanted actually to increase the area under cultivation, and the rainfall was less than the crop water requirement, so they had to irrigate those lands. So initially they didn't put the drainage system, but now they have installed a drainage system, and that's why they can now manage salinity in that area. Anywhere in the world where we will have to irrigate a piece of land, if we do not provide a drainage to remove the salts which are irrigated via irrigation water, sooner or later will end up in salinization of that soil.
How long would that process take, do you know?
It depends, actually. There are different factors. The first one is the water quality itself. What is the quality of water that is being used? If the irrigation water already contains a lot of salts, so the process will be faster than an area where the irrigation water quality will be better, less amount of salts. Second, what is actually the level of groundwater? Because if the groundwater is very deep, you may not need a drainage system right at the beginning of the irrigation. Like if you look at the Indian subcontinent, where the large-scale irrigation started about a century ago, but the soil started becoming salt-affected after about four decades of irrigation, because the groundwater levels were so low, so deep, that whenever the salts used to accumulate in the soil surface, so the farmers used to over-irrigate. To apply an excess irrigation that would push the salts down to the groundwater. The groundwater started moving up, up, and up. So a stage reached when the groundwater reached to a level where it started actually affecting the plant growth, and the conditions of waterlogged soils appeared, which ultimately then again turned into salt-affected land. It also depends on climate conditions. Like in colder climates, there will be less evaporation. There will be less amount of water that would be used for irrigation. In hotter climates, there will be more water will be used for irrigation to grow the same crop. But at the same time, there will be more salts added to the soil.
And in some parts of the world, poor farmers just don't have the money to add this kind of irrigation and then the drainage as well. What is happening, for example, in Pakistan in the Indus Basin?
Actually, you see, the drainage system itself cannot be installed by a single farmer, particularly when we are talking about farmers in developing country like Pakistan, because the salinity salt-affected lands or their effects are not just on the on-farm, they are off-farm also. So the farmers, what they can do, they can rationalize the amount of irrigation water, that they should not really apply too much water. Applying too much water means applying too much salts to the soil. The installation of a drainage system cannot be done at a small farm of hectare, something like that level in developing countries. So this is basically a collective kind of action at the irrigation district level or the basin level, where there is a need for a comprehensive study first to see what is the gradient of groundwater movement, how the drainage water could move, how one can actually collect that drainage water, what would be the disposal of that drainage water, and what will be the ultimate disposal of that salt that would be collected through drainage water. So this is basically beyond a farmer. There is a need for an action plan at a district level or a national level, like what has been done in Murray-Darling Basin or in San Joaquin Valley, where the governments took care of that. Similar measures have been taken in a country like Pakistan also, where when the groundwater level rose to alarming levels and the soil started becoming salt affected, then the government, with the help of international donors, they installed actually the vertical drainage system and the horizontal drainage system. But I'm talking about vertical drainage system, but they started actually pumping groundwater and moving that groundwater through drainage canals. This was again undertaken by the government, and those areas where these drainage systems were installed, slowly the farmers were able actually to grow the same type of crop with the similar type of productivity they used to have before the soil degradation process.
What happens to those farming communities if salt causes the land to become degraded?
Yeah, actually it depends on the scale of degradation. If the degradation is not too much, the farmers will still continue growing crops, although they will a little bit compromise on the crop yield. Then there are moderately salt-affected lands where some of the farmers will start actually growing crops varieties which are relatively salt-tolerant. There's a lot of work being done to develop salt-tolerant cultivars or varieties of crops. They would tend to grow those type of crops. The other approach, some of the farmers, they organize the crop rotation in a way that when the salts are actually more in the root zone, like in summertime, they can grow a salt-tolerant crop. In winter, when the salts are relatively less amount, then they grow a relatively moderately salt-tolerant or salt-sensitive crop. So there are interventions that the farmers can do. There are areas which, if they become completely actually degraded and the farmers don't see a benefit in cultivating that, and those areas are basically then abandoned. Those lands become salt-affected wastelands, and the farmers, then they simply move out of that land. And we know in several actually cases, then they go to a nearby city for labor work and other things. So migration also happens in case of extremely salt-affected lands.
Mansour Kadir, do you have predictions of how widespread and how serious salt degradation of soils will become by 2050? Will we beat this problem with the drainage that you suggest, or do you think we're actually going to lose some land, possibly forever, more or less, to salt?
Actually, the publication that we have developed is targeted on decision makers. It's mainly a synthesis of the information that clearly highlights the importance of decision making in this regard. These lands are very important because they fall in irrigated areas where infrastructure is available, irrigation infrastructure is available, roads, everything is available there. And if we will not pay attention to these lands, and there are not actually many areas left which are productive outside the irrigation system. So basically, we will have to pay attention to these areas to revert them back to the productivity status. Now, the question is how this can be done. Our publication has clearly outlined that there is a need for supportive institutions who could do action on the ground. We need pertinent policies. We need a good level of economic analysis that could clearly demonstrate what are the existing costs and what could be the potential benefits out of that. The cost that we have suggested, $27 billion annually, are just based on the crop yield losses, because we do not have estimates on the damage to infrastructure, to roads, to buildings, decrease in land value and all that. We also need involvement of private sector, because there are so many industries which are directly linked to agriculture, like timber, pulp or paper industries. Those are directly dependent on agriculture produce. So there are a range of actors. If those can be mobilized, I'm quite confident that this land degradation process can be reversed, and those lands which we are talking about in irrigated areas can be reverted back to highly productive state. If we will delay or will not take any action, I'm afraid the scale of land degradation currently at 2,000 hectares per day may further actually increase. It's all actually up to us as an international community and to those governments where large-scale salinization of land and water resources has occurred.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith, and my guest has been Dr. Mansoor Kadir. He's with the UN University's Institute for Water, Environment, and Health. Dr. Kadir, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your knowledge.
It was certainly my pleasure. Thank you so much for providing me the opportunity. All the very best.